That's right. I totally forgot to start recording, by the way. I gotta record this. So I like the idea. I don't know that I make it a requirement. But I do say, hey, I'd like to set up a rule for us that that we have our cameras on whenever possible, and so that we're all able to have be on the same page. So
Got it. Okay.
another rule that I've had set up is that you keep private conversations to a minimum in meetings. So, like people wanting to like text or chat with just one person in the meeting while the meeting is going on, that you just keep that to a minimum. Sometimes it's helpful, to have somebody say, hey, should we bring this up or whatever, but like just try to keep it to a minimum just to respect the fact that we're all here in this meeting at this time. Let's make the absolute most of it so that we can be done sooner. And that's the funny thing. Very few people are like, gosh, I can't wait for our next meeting. I'm so excited. And so that's why I designed the protocol I did, because it actually increases engagement, anticipation, performance. I remember going into one of my clients, I sat through one of his weekly meetings. It lasted 90 minutes. And I watched as people were just flagging the entire time. They were just like, why are we here doing this? This is such a waste of time. And he just didn't understand how to manage the meeting. So I got the meeting down to 45 minutes. They doubled the amount of work they could get done, tripled it. And so anyway, there you go. That's the
Yeah, I think every company could use a little bit of that, because meeting efficiency
absolutely.
is a huge
Absolutely,
stuff.
man. Take a look at that video. And the other really critical part of running a meeting, and it's something that most people don't realize is a huge game changer, and that is to add at the very end of every weekly meeting a like best next time, or what's called a Delta Plus, where you basically just go around the circle and you say, what did you like best about this meeting? And what would you like to see different? And the most important thing you do is you make them do what's called an active pass, which means they aren't allowed to stay silent. If they don't want to say anything, they have to say the word I pass. And what that does is they're like, well, if I have to say the word I pass, I may as well say something. And then you get really good data and feedback, and then you iterate those meetings and they get better and better and better over time. So install that at the end. It's a 5-minute block. And people will appreciate it. And that kills water cooler conversation where people talk about the meeting after the meeting.
One just quick question, Shane, just in general with the modules, making my way through them. Are they sequential? Because, in these calls we jump around and I've looked at some stuff from module five, like the ease versus impact and those matrices. So am I okay just meandering through this as things
You
come
are.
up, or just,
You
okay,
are. So
that's what I figured.
they are built sequentially, but you can absolutely bounce around. And if there's something that I know that I want that I reference but from a prior module that has a whole body of knowledge that I need you to have, I'll simply say that in the video. You'll see me say, go back to video two of module one, review that, and then that'll explain what I'm about to talk about next.
Okay.
Yeah, so feel free to follow what interests you.
Great. Thank you.
Colin, we'll come back to you. I know you got some other questions. I want to get to some others as well. JD, how's it going, man? Welcome.
Sorry, trying to get unmuted there. Doing well. Appreciate it. And actually want to start out with a huge thank you to what you've created here and the coaching so far. I had my meeting with the pharmacist who's needing to move to a floater role or not a culture fit. Gave him the options, and he took the option to stay on and be in a floater role and even reduce hours.
Wow,
Um,
that's awesome.
and, and it was one that he was like, it almost felt like from him, he came up with the idea himself.
Perfect.
So I really liked that. And I mean, we had the tough conversation with him on, I did his review, and then at the end of it I said, this is where we've decided to go, and went through that process. And he's like, you gave me that option a few months ago and I was almost kicking myself that I didn't take it. So I'm going to take it this time and go move forward. I think it's the best thing for me, and
Awesome.
we've been able to pull that together. So I've actually had my boss call me, or one of the owners called me and said that he's like, I don't know what you're drinking from right now, but you're doing really great. You've had a lot of things come at you over the last 2 weeks, and you've got them all solved in the last 2 weeks, from manager positions leaving to pharmacists leaving to main key stakeholders at certain stores leaving and being able to either get them back or make a transition plan from there. So definitely appreciate it.
This is awesome, JD. You are showing up in all the right ways, that you're on every one of these calls. You're doing all the homework. You're doing all the assignments I give you, and you're getting results. So that's awesome. And so congratulations. I'm super happy to hear that, and more to come. There we go. You're getting jazz hands from Susan. That's for real. She doesn't do jazz hands a lot. I know her, and she would never do jazz hands. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
That's
All good. Big things that we're coming into right now at this time of year, some strategic planning that we're doing. And so looking for, we have a pretty good plan. I have an Excel sheet that lines out all of our timeline from our COO. She's that type of organized and planning and everything. We have some manager input documents that we utilize, but for myself, besides trying to gather everything together and lead this division of our company into the next year and or the future years as well, that tends, I'm very much a lot of times in the weeds, and I need to get a bigger, broader picture with that and kind of think forward. And so anything that we can do to help towards that would be great. Kind of initially from the organizational side of things, and then just kind of personally, because I tend to do a lot of reflecting back to the last year during this time frame. Say, well, we didn't get that done. We didn't get that done. We didn't get this done. And I get a little frustrated and down with myself on what's going on with those things. So.
Okay, I got you covered. I'm going to share my screen. This is definitely something that I consult with organizations on, and strategic planning and strategic thinking is a whole body of knowledge, and there's a way to do it and a way not to do it, and most people don't know how to do it. And so module five is ultimately all about strategic planning.
Okay.
So, you can walk through different things, like, two different kinds of decisions, or there's data-driven decisions and there's crystal ball decisions. So you want to get clear on, when we're doing strategic planning, there's going to be a whole set of decisions and strategies that are born of data, that certain kinds of things are, you're going to be informed by KPIs. And that's actually really straightforward. Then there's the other kind of decision. And so if you have two different decision kinds of decisions. One is data driven, which is easy. The other one is, I call, crystal ball decisions, which is you will never have enough data or information in order to make a good decision. So there you're using intuition, there you're using your gut. And so there are different practices that you do to get in touch with the wisest part of you that makes the best decisions. And so I teach that in module five. And so that's kind of good for you to just explore. What in my strategic plan are data-driven decisions, and what are crystal ball decisions? So that's the first thing to know.
Okay.
And what I want you to do is, down here, you can skip over some of these, getting down to, here we go, breakthrough strategy. So this is a strategic plan sample. You'll get a strategic planning template, and I want you to watch this video and begin to understand how to think through the various issues that you as an organization have to do. And there's just a series of questions you get to answer. What's our objective? What's our strategy? How are we going to accomplish this? What are the tactics? What are the structures that are going to support that? There's a sequence that you have to answer questions in that most people don't understand. Make sure you answer this one before you answer that one. Some of this you may already have in place, but just try to understand this and work with this template, because it'll help you a lot.
Okay.
Another thing that you can do is, you can do effectively like the SWOT analysis before you would do a strategy. And I talk about best practices in SWOT analysis. Something as simple as, you actually don't start, you don't go in the order of the word SWOT, which is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Simple thing to understand is you start with opportunities and threats that are outside the organization. So when you're doing a SWOT analysis, you want to distinguish between what are the things that are outside the organization that are not in our control, and then what are those things that are in our control and inside the organization. So you first do opportunities and threats outside the organization, out of our control. which then informs the strengths and weaknesses of the organization and internal, the things you have control over, that allow you to respond to those opportunities and threats. A lot of people make the mistake of just going, what are our strengths and weaknesses as a company, in abstraction, which is not useful. They must be designed in a context that is specific to the external environment. So that's the way you think about a SWOT. Now the SWOT, once you have the SWOT done, then what you do is you go and think about the strategic planning. And then the last thing I wanna say about strategic planning, and really this is more about goal setting. So when it comes to setting goals, one of the most effective things you can do is create minimum, target, and stretch goals. A minimum goal is that which is worth doing and you could easily clear, you and your team could easily clear. A target goal is, if most of the things that are in your control went your way, what would we achieve if we did that? And a stretch goal is, if absolutely all the planets align and everything that's out of our control and everything that's in our control all went to 11, what could we possibly achieve? And what that does is it allows people who are afraid of missing goals, you know that you can achieve them because you've got a minimum in place. And those that are highly motivated by big visions and moonshots, they're motivated because you've got a really big vision. But that way you don't, at the end of the year, you're not going, well, we failed again, we failed again, we failed again. Make sense?
Yeah, that definitely helps out. And I really like that idea with the SWOT, because I'm walking through a lot of our new managers with how to complete that. And we tend to use the last year's SWOT and just make adjustments to those. But yeah, everybody usually starts out with our strengths and weaknesses and then goes to opportunities and threats. So
yeah, so do a little, just watch all these videos and you're going to get a handle on that. And then the other thing I would say is action planning. So let's say you've got a strategy in place and your goals are clear. A strategy doesn't always tell you priority necessarily. It doesn't always give you the sequence where you should focus your energy first in what order. And so this is where I recommend like the easy act impact matrix, where you're looking at how easy is something to implement and how much impact would it have? And you would map it according to those four quadrants. And something that is very easy to implement and has a huge impact, that's obviously going first. And so then you just follow the order after that. And that maps out what things need to happen in what order.
Okay.
So anyway, all of that is super useful. You could also do polarities if you want. Polarities are a whole nother thing that actually are part of strategic planning. But I think a lot of module five, as you're getting prepped for embarking on a strategic plan, I think that's going to be hugely helpful for you.
Great. Thanks.
Good questions. Any other questions, comments about the strategy stuff?
Not that I know of right now.
Okay, awesome. Michelle, I see you're back.
Yes, I am. Welcome. I apologize. World colliding all at one time.
Not at all. Glad you could be here. How you doing? What's the latest? I gave you a lot of homework last week. How did you do on all that homework?
As between work and still working, I'm going slow because I need to digest the information.
Absolutely.
It is a lot of information it's not that I'm not completing it. I have to digest and go back and look over it. Yeah. But I want to touch, the SWOT analysis. I just did a SWOT analysis for where I am. And the thing is I had to look internally, because right now we are our biggest threat. We are our biggest risk. As I've been there, individuals are leading, we're building, they're trying to run the business based on feeling, not best practices. We are afraid of X, so we don't want to change. The company is really in this pivotal point, right? Either they change, I don't mean to sound dramatic, but the change or die thing is really here, right? Either you change or you don't. And I have to tell, I find myself questioning my decision to move to this company, because I don't see how I can impact change here at all. And I know it's only been 30 days, but
okay.
I'm a little concerned.
So let me give you a few things to help you here. One is, first is divest yourself of the outcomes.
Okay.
Because the vast majority of what you're going to be trying to impact, you are not going to be able to control. And so stress increases in us. I'm trying to remember how this, there was a guy who had a great quote. I can't remember the quote, but I'll just say it this way. Stress increases in us when our feeling of responsibility is higher than our ability to control those things.
Oh, yeah.
That is where stress gets set off. So one of the ways to decrease stress is to release the responsibilities to the place where you have control. Now, I understand you may want to impact way more than you have control over, but the first step for you is to figure out, what do I actually have control over? Which levers can I actually pull and use? And which ones can't I? And I will release my expectation of outcome for any lever I have no control over. And I will continue to work with the levers I do control. That will help. So that's the first step that I think you want to think about, is like, how do I identify what I have control over? Second thing I want you to remember is change management is slow. And so because you're such a high impact person, and we talked about this, you're a high bandwidth person, you make big change, big impact, you see what the right answer is, you know which way to go. And it's just like, you got to pull your hair out because nobody's going as fast as you. So you are right now turning the Titanic, and you can see the iceberg ahead. And what you can do is, let's do the best we can to alert that there's an iceberg, and then help people steer and know that you might hit the iceberg. And you're going to be okay either way. You've already got a reserve spot on the lifeboat, so you're going to be fine either way. Once you tell yourself that, you'll be more calm, less anxious, and more able to guide them. Because when other people feel that you are anxious and pushing, they become more resistant. When people feel you are freely supporting and you're like, hey, I think we should go left. If you go right, I'll go with you guys for a while and we'll make the most of it. But I'll continue to remind you, left is a better course of action. And here's why left is a better course of action. And we're going to have a series of conversations for us to get aligned around that. So if you remember, you are in a realignment situation, not a turnaround situation. Now, you know it's turnaround. You know it's like urgent and major. But realignment is always identified as if people are in denial and don't see the need to change. Now, I understand your bosses see the need to change and they want you to get that change going. It's the people.
They're even divided. One sees that we need to change. The other one wants to stay the same.
Awesome. Even better for you to release that responsibility to say, my direct boss has decided that we need to change. I'm going to continue to work towards that. And I'm going to continue to report to him or her exactly what roadblocks are in the way. But I'm going to do it from a place of calm. And I'm not going to feel personally stressed or even personally responsible for any of the outcomes. And that, it's really weird, but the more calm you are with the way that you bring your solutions, the more people want to hear more from you. Your credibility increases because you're no longer inserting what they think could be ego. The reason that high levels of animation and activation cause people to lose credibility is because people believe that you've got some hidden agenda or you've got some personal thing that's really affecting you that you can't manage yourself, or you're just lazy and you're pissed off. You got to do extra work and you don't feel like it, or you're feeling out of control and you're feeling put upon, and that's ego stuff. You're not actually dealing with ego stuff. You're dealing with a genuine desire to help, but they won't be able to see that. So for you, continuing to go, okay, how do I lower my feeling of responsibility to match what I have control over? And then I'm going to start controlling those things. I'm going to flip all those levers. And when somebody comes and goes, we need you to do this, you're like, hey, that's great. Let me get to work on that. Just to be clear, those are things that are out of my control. I'll be happy to try to impact that indirectly. I'll see if there's some ways that I could kind of indirectly help with that. But just to set expectations properly, that's going to take a while.
Yeah. And I have control issues in general, working on those.
I know. And that's why I'm encouraging you to de-escalate Because, well, here's the deal. You came into this world with a purpose, and that purpose is to change it. You are a change agent in the world. And people who are change agents in the world do have control issues. And so you're not alone, you know, and not everybody has that purpose or calling in the world to come in and like make a big, huge impact. Some people are operators and executors, and that's a beautiful thing, and we need that. You are just visionary change agent, and it's really hard when you don't have control over the levers. So, you know, you'd be an amazing entrepreneur because you'd have control over all the levers that you want to control.
Funny you should say that. maybe very shortly. Well, I'll have to follow up with you. It'll take maybe about a year, but I have to follow up.
Yeah, and that may be right. But what I want you to learn in this context is all the skills you're going to need as an entrepreneur also. And you can learn Thank that you. In this role really well.
Yeah, I keep reminding myself, and not to be biblical or whatever it is, I was led here and put here for a reason, and I have to figure out how to grow where I'm planted. I keep missing my mark. So I'm like, okay, fine. You didn't learn there. Let's put you here. And it's really where I have to slow down and do exactly what you're talking about. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good. Okay. We'll come back to you in a minute. Susan, I'm going to check in with you again. How you doing? Do you have anything you want to add or think about or talk about or questions?
No, I'm enjoying listening to everyone and furiously writing down little tidbits that I can use and take away. The one thing that I will say is our conversation the other day, where I shared with you some of the situation, I have had a conversation with the board as a result of that. And I spent the night before furiously writing, you know, things with stars and exclamation points and underlined, and got it all out of my system so that when I actually had the meeting, I was able to sit back and be very calm, mm-hmm. and hear everything that everyone had to say. And not knowing any of these, you know, ideas that you shared with Michelle, is that I don't have control over everything. So I can only do what I can do. And until everybody else realizes that they have a responsibility and are accountable, then I'm just going to sit right here and do what I need to do. And, you know, I'm over here if you need me.
I love it.
Very helpful.
So,
and I have to learn that. So working on it.
So it was, I tell you, the pen and the paper and writing. I mean, I would wake up at 1:30 and say, oh, I forgot that. And I'd write it all down and I'd underline it. And then it was gone. It had been compartmentalized. And then I realized that it really wasn't anything that was going to bring me to the place that I was hoping to get to, that it was my issue and not necessarily what everyone else saw. And if I had presented that information, exactly what you said, Shane, no one would have heard what I really had to say. They would have only seen the jumping up and down of the, you know, the crazy person on the other end of the thing. And that's not who I wanted to present at that time. I wanted to be someone who was, that they could look to have a level head and truly with the best interest of the organization at heart at all times.
Okay. So what you just identified, Susan, is at the heart of what makes truly transformational great leaders. The distinction between good managers and great leaders is a trait that they cultivate, which is called a non-anxious presence. Even if you don't say a word, your executive presence that is grounded in a state of calm, while everybody else in the system's anxiety is rising, you have the power to unilaterally bring the anxiety down. Anxiety is sand in the gears of any system. And when a leader knows how to be a non-anxious presence, they have the ability to lubricate the gears of that system to make better decisions. So that's the work. The work is to figure out how to lower your anxiety level whenever you're in a meeting or in a context where big decisions have to be made.
So that's
just a great, and you used a practice, very specific practice, and there are lots of different practices, which I'm happy to share with you guys if you want, that that lowered your anxiety.
Yeah. And a great, I was going to say, which module is that in?
That is actually, I don't think that's in a module, but it may be in module 2, and then there's another one in module 5. It's a heart-centered meditation. But let me give you just a couple of practices to deal with your anxiety. One is go outside, lay in the grass, and look at the sky, and allow the magnetivity of the earth, the gravity of the earth, to kind of pull out stress and anxiety, and your vision of the sky to see the vastness of what's above. It's a weird thing to do. It takes 5 minutes. It will change how you experience what's next. So that's one. Another great practice to manage anxiety and reduce it is exactly what you just described, which is writing down all the things you wish you could say and all the things you actually feel, and write it in a really one-sided way and almost childish, like as a 10-year-old.
Write it as
emotional as you can get it. And then what's weird is once it clears and is out of you, and handwriting is a very powerful way to do that. Once that happens, you actually have the ability to then free all the emotions so that you can get to the thing that is at the core. So try that. Let's see, what's another practice? Physical practices. So especially maybe in your case, this is more for you, Michelle, potentially based on your personality. Physical exertion can be really helpful in burning off. So you come into the world with lots of extra energy. You're plugged into a nuclear power plant, so you can achieve a lot more than the average bear. And what that means is sometimes for you, you might live with a low-grade ambient rage. And so the way that you make sure that that low-grade anger turns into actionable, supportive, constructive stuff is you just burn it off. Like, you know, I know you come back from working out a lot, but like, burn off that extra energy by going and exercising. You don't have to exercise for a long time, just at a high intensity. Make sure your heart gets up. Go boxing.
Very true.
Go sprint. Go do push-ups. Go do whatever you can do physically that really, really feels intense for bursts of time, will help you regulate that energy and power you have.
That is a true statement. I've learned as over the past really 5 years, as I've regularly exercised, that I manage my stress better. The health benefits are the side effect.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm exercising for stress release than my health, even though there's a benefit.
Absolutely.
But yeah.
Awesome.
I thought it was just me.
No.
But that makes sense. Thank you for explaining me.
Yeah, and it is unique to you in some ways. You're of the 9 personality patterns, your patterns are most responsive to that kind of exercise. There are other personality types that doesn't necessarily change their dynamic, but for you, it's important. Awesome. Okay. Susan, anything else you want to talk about to prep you for the coming week? Is there any conversations you have coming up? Anything you want to talk about? We had talked about designing conversations that you need to have with the board, the CEO, creating agreements, all that stuff. Like module four has absolutely necessary ingredients for you that are all about roles and responsibilities and forming agreements.
Yeah. So I will get to that one. Okay. That will be great. I think the shoe is on the other foot now. I've had the opportunity to first of all, I was able to have the opportunity to be heard, which I hadn't had before. And as a result of writing everything down, I had a much clearer ability to present what I needed to present in a way that was kind to everyone. That I didn't see I used an analogy that the organization has a right hand and a left hand, and I would like to shake hands, but there is a part that would like to amputate the other side. And it resonated with everyone on the board because it clarified without pointing any fingers in any particular place. It was just about what we were trying to accomplish and the ability to accomplish it without saying this one or that one or the other one, that we needed both, they need to work together. And that's what we have to accomplish to set those roles, to become accountable in order to move forward.
Good. So you're empowered to do that now. And then what the module 4 will help you with is designing and articulating those roles and accountabilities and responsibilities. You might also find a RACI chart really helpful. That's also in module 4 potentially.
Perfect. Thank you.
So I'll let you keep kind of getting familiar. I mean, there's no rush here. We got plenty of time, but I'm just checking in with you. Good. Okay, let's go back to Colin. Colin, you have anything else you want to check in on? Questions you have?
So I have a conversation coming up next week with an employee who has exhibited a similar pattern over the years. And the pattern's been predicated by she gets overwhelmed very easily at certain points throughout the year. She comes back and says, I can't do this anymore. I need to take this. I need to take that. And most of it's a reduction of workload. I generally have some strategy conversations with her. I walk through kind of her practices and overall efficiencies and how she's managing. And ultimately we get to the same place with, oh, okay, it's not that bad. And then, you know, it goes along for another 3 or 4 or 5 months. And then she comes back and sends an email and says, I'm reaching out again because I need help, or, you know, I need this or that. Or this time around, she says, you know, it was something to the effect of, well, I just need to take this piece of my book of business and give it to somebody else. And we kind of talk through, okay, what is it about that book of business that's so labor intensive? Is it the stuff? And most of it circulates around stuff that she doesn't know or is not comfortable with. And she's really had a challenge, and she's been a great worker, a great member of our family for 15 years. And she, when she gets challenged with certain things that are a little bit outside her comfort zone, she just loses all sense of stability. And as you said, the anxiety just creeps up and it totally derails her. So the conversation that I'm going to have with her is really furtherance or continuation of conversations I've had over the last few months with what do we do with this piece of book of business? Because it keeps circulating back as this is the pain point and we're just going to move it. And we've developed some alternative solutions for it. I want to make sure that I handle this delicately because she does get, you know, very emotional. And also there is a component of reduction in compensation because we are going to, you know, move this book to another source of servicing. And, you know, ultimately that drives her compensation package. And, you know, we have to, you know, make some accommodations in order to service it somewhere else. So really long-winded question of, you know, what should I be concerned or what tactics should I be taking into this conversation just to make sure that it goes as smoothly as possible.
Does she know this is going to change her compensation?
She does.
She already knows that. And she's accepted that and is fine with it.
She hasn't accepted it. It was an option of a solution. So we kicked around a couple of different solutions. Two of them came to surface. Do we bring in additional support? A quarter of an FTE to do some of the lower level admin work, would that help alleviate her stress? Or secondarily, we could, you know, as she had indicated, move the whole book of business, but there would be compensation ramifications if we went down that path. So we're still kind of at this, do we make the right decision? You know, what's the decision? And from a leadership perspective, we're looking at this and seeing this recurring pattern and just saying, okay, we have a book of business and a really self-contained area that she can work in and continue to grow, you know, marginally over the next couple of years as she likes to. And she's always been the one that says, I want to grow. And then as soon as we give her the opportunity to grow, she says, I can't handle this anymore. So it's kind of been a mixed message that we've been receiving from her and is continuing to surface. And so, you know, our standpoint is, hey, we've got an opportunity now. We found a good candidate and we can move this book of business to another team and it would be better served for that book of business. And we think that it'll be better served for her in the long run. But it's a matter of getting her buy-in to this being the strategy as opposed to maybe one of the other ones that we kicked around.
Okay. So a couple of associations that I just want to provide, and then you can tell me if we want to dig deeper. But the first thing I would say is, again, I'll just remind you, as a high culture organization, it is not uncommon for those organizations to have really indirect conversations. And that's because everyone wants to be nice and friendly and kind. You're serving her at her best when you're super direct about what's going on and how you're experiencing her. So without knowing more details, I'll give you an example of how I might have a conversation like that. And you can tell me which way we want to go. But it's basically something like this. Hey, we've had this conversation probably once every 6 months. We're looking at a really significant solution because I don't think you want to keep coming back to us and we don't want to have to keep revisiting the same thing. Let's try to solve this once and for all. We're going to give you two options. Option one is the one we're recommending. And that option, but it's not our, we're going to let you choose, but this is our recommendation. Option one is we're going to move the book of business. It's going to go over here. This is exactly how that's going to affect your compensation. And that'll free you from that responsibility, but it also means you're going to lose exactly this amount of money. So that's option one. We think it's the right one because so far we just haven't found a way to solve this under your purview. And that's either because it can't be solved that way, or it's because you're not at a point where you know how to manage that. I'm not making an assessment either way. I'm just letting you know that that's where we are. Option two is we give you this little bit of extra help or support, and then you go after it and you start making a difference. Now, I want to warn you, the reason that we're leaning towards this other way is because I respect that you want to grow. And each time you've come to me and you've said you want to grow, but I have to tell you, each time I feel like you're hitting your capacity limits. Now, I'm not sure why that is, and maybe we haven't supported you in some meaningful way, but what I do know is we just can't keep having those same conversations. So if you take option two, the one that we're not necessarily recommending, then here's what we expect of you. We expect that in the next 6 months, you're going to make meaningful progress and that you won't have hand-raising moments as often. And if you do raise your hand a couple more times, we'll just go with option one. And how does that sound to you? So again, there's a lot of context I'm missing, so I'm not saying you need to have the conversation in exactly that way, but I gave you basically 5 minutes of an example conversation that you could use to be super direct while still giving her the experience of control and decision-making. Mm-hmm. Now, if you've already decided, no way we're leaving that with her. She doesn't even have the choice anymore. I would tell you, you're having the conversation too late. It's okay to do, but I would encourage you to have the conversation when you still give an employee a chance at a choice, because they are much more incentivized to go to bat for themselves when they feel they got to decide. What's your reaction to what I just said?
We're a little late in the game. So I think I set it up in a way that I wanted her to have input into the decision. But unfortunately I made moves and, you know, the timing of it, I should have had that conversation a little bit earlier, or at least been more direct. I'm recognizing based on our conversation before, as well as, you know, high culture companies don't fire very well. And it's because we have indirect conversations. Yep. And it's because, you know, it's a fact. So, it's good perspective.
It doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way.
Right. Greg. I agree.
Yeah. So you will do yourself a whole lot of favors the more you're letting people into what you're actually thinking and feeling. I know you're going to be respectful. I'm never worried about that with you. I am worried about you being indirect and using words and phrases that are causing them to have to read between the lines because you don't want to hurt feelings, know this. You do mm-hmm. not get the option of not hurting feelings, and you do not get the option of people always liking you. That's just part of leadership. It's just going to happen.
Yeah.
So the more, but what you will get is they will respect you and they will feel they were given dignity and choice. And that is my kind of, as a general rule in management, not in every case, the more you can give people direct honest feedback earlier in their lack of performance, and the more you structure choices that they get to make, those hard conversations get so much easier. Your employees feel empowered and they're actually going to go to work for you. And if they don't, they know what the consequence is because you've already laid it out. And they feel like it was their choice. And so that's my recommendation. And by the way, we did that with JD. JD literally just came through this thing where I walked him through this exact thing. And JD just reported that one of his employers like almost felt like his idea. And so there wasn't a hard conversation because he prepared the way at a time when there was an opportunity. So that's the learning from this. Let's talk about how to have the conversation that you got to have now. So why don't you tell me what the boundary conditions are, the decisions that have already been made, and let's help you make this conversation easier from here. Go ahead.
Great. So we have hired or we have an offer. We have hired and accepted a lower level or a support person that's entry level that's going to be joining a team. The team, you know, needs additional income or needs additional book of business to support. And so the senior vice president on that team, the lead on that team, is welcomed and wants to take over that book of business. So we have a nice trajectory of about 2 to 3 months before, you know, we do introductions and onboarding and orientation with the new employee. And then that book can be reintroduced around the first of the year, shortly thereafter. So we have a little bit of time frame for transition, and you know, that's kind of where we're stand right now.
Okay, got it. So what you're also wanting to prevent is any sabotage, because what you're talking about there is you want to incentivize her to play nice and onboard this new person and hand the book of business well. Yeah?
Right.
What was her understanding the last conversation you had? You know, what's her belief about the world? Is she like, oh, they might go hire someone, or does she have no idea that you're about to move this book of business?
Where it was is that we made some minor changes in the short term to see mm-hmm. if those had a big impact on it. She's going through a busy renewal season right now, so her focus has been on other accounts and other books of business. Where we left it was, this is not the last conversation regarding this book of business. We're going to need to figure out a more long-term solution for the book of business. But we want you to be part of kind of the evaluation and looking at this book of business to see what the solution is.
So you said to her, you want her to be a part of the long-term solution about this book of business. And now you're going to tell her, hey, we made the solution without you. Yeah?
Yeah, when you put it that way, it sounds horrible, but yeah.
Yep, and that's why it's important that you hear the truth, right? Truth is going to set you free, and here's the truth. The truth is you made a mistake, and you're going to tell her that, and that's going to help her. The truth is you're going to say, hey, I messed something up, and it's going to impact you. And the mistake that I made is that I told you one thing and I did another. And I did that because I was a little bit careless. I was a little bit thoughtless and I was just trying to get work done. And upon reflection, I realized I hadn't really taken you into account. And I'm sorry for that. But this is where we are now. And so I want to acknowledge that. And here's what we've decided. And here's why we've decided it. And while I do regret how I did it, I still think it's the right decision. And I still think it's absolutely mm-hmm. in your best interest. I just regret not involving you because I said I would. And because if I were in your shoes, I would want that. And I didn't give you that. If you do a mea culpa and you stand your ground and you let her know you still believe that it's the right outcome, people forgive. You know, it's when you pretend nothing happened that you piss people off. Now, you don't necessarily have to be quite that hard on yourself in that conversation. You can even admit your own frustrations and indicate that back to her. You could even say, hey, you know, I think this is what happened and this is why I did it, but I'm going to tell you what I think also might have been going on subconsciously for me. I think in some ways, I felt like because we kept having this conversation, I didn't think that I was going to get good solutions. And so I just realized I need to make this call. And I think if I were in your shoes, maybe that would feel awkward or uncomfortable. And I want you to know my intention wasn't to do that. My intention was try to get a great solution. And so I'm sorry that what I did may have impacted you negatively, but I still believe it's the right decision. So that's another way you can go. So there's different ways you can go. And what I'm after here for you, Colin, is what's true. So I don't want you to apologize for something if you genuinely don't feel like you did anything wrong. You shouldn't apologize for that. You can apologize for the impact that it had on her. But the point is the truth. So let me just pause there. I've given you a couple of directions. Does anything in there feel like the truth?
Yeah, I think honestly, I think that the first approach is the logical approach for me. I mean, I set it up in a way that I thought that would be the right way to do it. And then I just didn't finish the process. So I took every step, you know, 9 steps out of 10, and then I messed up on the 10th step. So at least I got 9. So now I just need to understand that, okay, and that was not the right way to go about it. It was before we made that final determination and to go that route, even if that route was still up in the air a bit as far as the candidate and so forth, I needed to loop her back in to say, hey, look, this is what we're considering. What do you think?
Perfect.
And are you in agreement with it?
So. It's okay for you to say you did 9 things right and the 10th one you didn't get right and that affected her and that probably isn't going to feel good for a little while. That's a great way to say it. Yeah. You know, you don't need to kind of pull the house down on yourself if you didn't do it all wrong. Just whatever you didn't do right, just own in front of her. And I'm telling you, people just feel respected, even if they're pissed off. They get over it much faster when somebody goes, I see the mistake. I understand how it happened. You know, I want to welcome you to share any of the ways that I impacted you if you want. And I'm all ears for the next 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you feel, how I experienced that. Let me own that. And then I'd love for us to be able to shake hands and get back to work. And what I need from you, in spite of the fact that I didn't do it right, is I still am going to ask you to help us make this transition. And that's a favor to me. Because what you're doing there is you're dealing with the emotional system of her unconscious desire to now collude against you by roadblocking and making it difficult and not participating in the transition. So it's important that you make a direct ask and invite her to be a part of that transition.
Got it. That makes sense.
Makes sense? Okay, good.
Yep. Thank you.
Let's go to JD. JD, anything else you want to check in on? Questions?
Not right now. I was trying to think if there was anything out there. I've got to circle back around with the pharmacist that I had moved previously. I have her review tomorrow, and I thought things were going better, but I guess after talking with the pharmacist today, it's not going as well. So I need to do some fact finding there and find out where that conversation is. But I think with our previous conversations that we've had and about working with her as well as the other pharmacists, I have a good foundation to have a conversation with her. So
awesome. Good. Okay. Michelle, more you want to talk about? Other things you want to punch in on as it relates to where you are and what you're working on?
I don't think so. I've taken the conversation we were having with us and you and what Susan had spoke about. There's a lot of things I can take away from that. So, I mean, it's just a lot of conversation, a lot of me trying to untangle the web of where we are today, proposing best practices or, you know, what I believe is successful, having those conversations. And it's, I just need to do what you said, right? I have to remove myself. I have to take out the emotion, so to speak. I have to remove myself from that control. And it's, you're right, because I inherently want to be successful, right? And I'm just like, why are you
you, and you will be successful, and you are successful. But success in this case isn't defined by outcomes. Success in this case is defined by, did you control the levers you had control over? If the answer is yes, and they failed, it's not a failure. You were successful. You are successful. So that's an important distinction.
And it's a different mindset where you've always been taught it's all about your outcomes, right? Your success was geared on your outcomes. That's a different mindset.
Yeah, and in this instance, there are instances where your outcomes are your determiner of success and failure. The other thing I would just say is reframe success and failure. You know, failure is a really activating word for a lot of people. It's emotionally charged. Success is a very activating word. It's emotionally charged. What if there was no such thing as failure or success? What if there was only feedback? Two different kinds of feedback that are there to guide you. Feedback you may emotionally not like and feedback you really like, but they're both equal, neutral, and serving the exact same goal, which is propelling you forward.
That's a different, that definitely reframes it, different mindset. And you're right. You're right. It's just, they are emotionally charged and add to the stress and add to, you know, everything. Cause of course you just, you want to do a good job. Well, at least me, I mean, I want to do a good job, right? I want to be successful. So I have to reframe. Yeah. I guess I have to sit down and figure out what does that mean. And to your point, right, it doesn't mean every time you work from home.
That's all right. We can hear you still. The other thing, you know, that occurs to me, Michelle, is that your expectation of timing may be out of whack. You know, the first 30 days in any new system or organization is purely fact finding. Which you know, but I think sometimes emotionally you feel like you should be further along. You don't even make meaningful change within 90 days in most cases. You've got 3 months to simply get smart, understand the relationships, get clear on expectations, present action planning ideas, get agreement and alignment from your boss about what steps you're going to take in what order, about how long those are going to take, and keep moving. And just lower the bar, because that bar is unreasonable. That is you trying to control gravity that you can't control.
Valid point. Yeah, very valid point. I think a lot of my, I'm just going to call it fear. I think it's the most, is the bipolar, the split, the total bipolar of the owners. One wants to pull one way, one wants to go another way. And
that's great. So that is 100% out of your control, not your correct responsibility to solve, but it is your responsibility to be a mirror. So you simply say to each boss, whenever you're talking to both, you simply say, hey, I'm here to execute exactly what you guys want to execute. You let me know when you guys have that worked out. Until then, I'm limited in my ability to execute the vision, because the vision doesn't have agreement between the two of you. If you want my input around that, if you want my recommendations, happy to give them. But I'm also here to support what you guys are up to. But I do think the sequencing is that you two have to get alignment first. Nothing wrong with being out of alignment, but you do need to get alignment first. Otherwise, you're pointing a very powerful weapon at many different things. And we want to point this weapon at the right thing. And then, by the way, you don't have to say this, but the implication is you are that powerful weapon. And you can even say that. You can say, look, I know I'm a high-powered weapon. And you point me in a direction, and you'll watch me execute. But at this point, I don't feel like it's very wise for me to point this weapon in a place where there isn't agreement from you guys.
Right. Yeah, I was asked on our meeting yesterday if I felt my hands were handcuffed by one of the owners. And I was like, yeah, I am. I'm completely handcuffed. You know, of course, the other one is the one that just wants to, we want to grow, but we just want to stay status quo. So I basically started that a little bit, with them.
So even an important part of this is to de-escalate the language. So if the language is handcuffed, it's a very imprisoning, dark metaphor. And that person was trying to get you to collude against the other owner. Are you feeling handcuffed? That's fine. They can say that. Okay. Your task is to diminish the value statements. Because guess what? The other owner has a right and a prerogative to keep things status quo. So your job is to say, am I handcuffed? No. Am I prevented from executing your vision? Yes. It's a really interesting
thing. I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah, but you're taking the metaphors and you're framing them in ways that are a little more neutral. So you're like, no, I'm certain that I'd be able to execute that. But you guys need to get alignment first.
Got it.
So from my perspective, if you want me to execute your vision, your first most important task is to establish agreements and alignment with your other owner. Once you guys have agreements and alignment, I'm ready to go. Point me in whatever direction the two of you agree on. I'm all here. I'm all in. Let's do this.
Okay.
So you're managing up now, and managing up is they don't know. They're not in this course with you. They don't understand that you can't do that. Like if they were in this course, I'd be like, you can't do that.
right.
You cannot hire and guide employees when you're not aligned. It's a huge mistake. So that's what I'd get to say to them. But you've got to do it from a position that is politically sensitive and aware of power dynamics.
I got to learn that internal internal politicals better.
And what could happen, the reason this is so important is that owner could go to the other owner and say, yeah, Michelle told me she's feeling handcuffed. She's pulling her hair out. You're frustrating her. And then he's like, oh, Michelle, got it. She's my enemy in the system now. You don't want to be that. You don't know where the power dynamics are at any given time. So you want to be like, I'm here to do what is best for you guys, what your wishes are. My interest is alignment. That way he can't say, Michelle said you were handcuffed. She's handcuffed. He's probably trying to do that, to use it in a conversation to influence him. He's not aware that that compromises you. But he's like, I'm looking for ammunition for my point of view. And he wants to go and say, look, I've got people that they're going to lead the organization. This person's feeling handcuffed. That person doesn't like you. This person can't stand the way you talk. And then all of a sudden, all those people are thrown into the bus.
Got it. Interesting.
So all it may feel safe to collude, but you want to be really judicious in how you do that.
Yeah, not trying to collude in the slightest, just answering a question. I mean, the thing is, it was with both of them on the phone call, right? So both of them heard the same answer.
Good. That's good.
Right.
That's but helpful.
I see your point. Yeah, that's I helpful. See your point.
I'm just giving you like a general rule, but I'm glad that they were both on the call. That helps them have a hard conversation they need to have. But yeah, the more you can just keep pointing them back to, are you guys in agreement? Great. Show me that you're in agreement. I need a written document even in some cases. Like show me in writing that you guys are in agreement.
No, but that's just valuable feedback in general, no matter what the conversation is going on. Again, you know, you wouldn't have in the moment when I'm being asked a question, I'm just answering your question back, not thinking the way you just presented it to me. But I see the difference.
Yeah. And I'm not saying you've done something terrible and it's irreparable at all. I'm just giving it as an illustration of like, we all the time, I do this all the time when I'm in an organization too. I make mistakes all the time and I train people in this. And I still am like in the moment, like, oh yeah, I shouldn't have said that, you know? And that goes back to Colin, like plenty of times that I'm a lot of the times a leader, I'm going, hey, I really screwed that up. Hey, I missed that. Hey, I'm sorry about that. So it's really important that we all get really good at owning when we don't do it right.
Agreed. Thank you.
You bet. I think.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, Shane. So I don't feel like I'm totally inept.
No, you're not at all. In fact, you really, all of us as leaders, we just need to get super good at going, oh yeah, that was my mistake. Like some of the best CEOs I know are kind of several times a week apologizing. They're amazing at what they do, but you're navigating an unchartable ocean. All of us are, because humans are incredibly complex and the emotional system is unpredictable. And so you step one way, you've got 10 choices, you make one of those choices and it's got 10 different consequences. And that's okay. You didn't do it wrong. You're not a failure. You're just a leader. And the more you can feel that, the more you can effortlessly own your missteps. And when you effortlessly own missteps, you raise the level of confidence in the system. Because leaders who are super defensive and unaware of their blind spots lower trust and lower credibility. Leaders who are almost humorous, self-effacing, and easy about the things they're not good at or the mistakes or the patterns, the more they understand their blind spots and talk about them, the more people trust them. And I'm not saying you need to spend a lot of time beating yourself up in front of others. That also can cause problems. So you don't need to be overly self-effacing. You do need to have clarity about your strengths, and that too needs to factor in. But there you go. That's the 411 on that stuff.
Shane, possibly at the same time there, you don't want to be, like you're saying, not to say, oh, these are all my weaknesses, they're my weaknesses all the time, and go into that. At the same time, though, we can't just use that as an excuse or a crutch. We can't say, oh, I'm just that way, or I come off this way all the time, and not try to work on it.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, of course you're working on it. But what you're doing is you're going to say, like, often when I go into a hard conversation, I will start the hard conversation with my tripwire. You know, I'll be like, hey, so just something you need to know about me. This isn't your problem. It is my problem. But I really struggle when I'm misunderstood. So my interest in the conversation is to be understood, but I also want to understand you. And just know, some people don't, that doesn't bother some people. It does bother me. I'm not proud of that. Hope to overcome it. I'm working on it. But honestly, I felt super misunderstood, and we just need to deal with that if that's okay. That's an example of, like, you lead into the conversation with, here's a little bit of a foible and a pattern of mine. I'm working on it. It's not your responsibility to fix it, but if it's all right, let's work with my silly little pattern. That's absolutely right. Yeah. So you're not like, I'm a yeller. I just like to yell, and you need to get over it. It's not that.
Well, and that's exactly what I was thinking, because one of the employees that I've been working with, she's like, yeah, my tone, it comes across really harsh, but that's just who I am. And I'm like,
right.
Yeah, that's okay. But you're yelling at people, and that doesn't come across okay. So.
And so the way that I would say that to her is, that's actually not who you are. That's where you start. And it can't be where you end, because you won't be effective here in this system. So when people do that, that's just who I am. You go, yeah, that's where you start. That's your default mode, but it isn't who you are. Because I know there are times when you haven't done that. Who you are is your height. You can't change your height no matter how hard you work. What you're talking about is weight. I can change my muscle mass. It's hard work. I'm not naturally really muscular. I've got to work at that. I don't start muscular. I get muscular after I work at it.
I think that's a mic drop moment right there.
You're what?
Exactly.
I think that's a mic drop moment. Call ended. Let's go.
Yep.
I appreciate that. Okay. Anything else? We got 4 more minutes. Or did I just drop the mic without knowing it?
That's enough.
Yeah, this has been an amazing call.
Thanks. Well, you guys are great. Thanks for showing up. appreciate it. I think you've got some homework, each of you. I'll look forward to hearing next week how it all went and whatever else is coming up.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Have a good week, everybody. Bye.